All right, once again, my name is Toby, and I'm an alcoholic. I have the privilege of introducing tonight a young man that I've seen when he came first into this program at the 164 group on Tuesday nights. I happen to know his sponsor pretty well. And, you know, I don't get to hear him talk much, but when we do have our meetings before and after the meeting, which are some of the best meetings you can ever go to, I've heard him speak, I've heard him talk about recovery, I've heard him join in and talking to a newcomer, and he sounds like he's on fire and he has something to say. Plus, when he speaks, you can't help but remember what he sounds like. With much ado, I bring you Dave.
My name's Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
I'm really, really nervous tonight. And first off, I wanted to say, if you're here tonight and you're in AA or in treatment, it's probably a good reason you're here, because since I've been here, I still haven't met nobody that come into this program on a winning streak. So, but with that, my name's Dave. I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic. But anyway, Hey, all right, I'm so nervous. I don't know why I'm nervous, because I spoke in front of a group a little bigger than this one time. But anyway, what it was like, what happened, what's it like now? And like Brett told me, the main thing to talk about is how I made a connection with my higher power, which I choose to call God today. Anyway, all right, well, I was born in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm 36 years old. My sobriety date is January the 3rd. 2012, so I'm coming up on 11 months. I got a sponsor, and I also have the privilege to sponsor a guy who's here tonight, and that's a blessing in itself right there. And I'm not going to get too much into the drunk-a-log or the drug-a-log or whatever, but I have had a pretty rough story, and you'll hear about it right here. So anyway, I grew up in Raleigh, outside of Raleigh, in a little small town, Knightdale, North Carolina. I grew up with my father owned a tobacco farm, and my grandparents also. So I grew up with them. I worked hard. I got a great mother who's never drinks at all. She might have one drink, and that's it. My father, he's a real strong alcoholic, real heavy, but he knows he's an alcoholic. He's never missed a day of work, and me or my brothers and sisters have never wanted for nothing. I got a younger brother who's 30, who's very crazy. He needs to be in these rooms. God willing, one day he'll make it here before he makes it into the ground. And I have an older sister who is just as good as they come. And she's 43. And I have a younger sister who is 34, and she's a principal of a middle school. And that's who my daughter lives with, which I'll get to that in a few minutes. So anyway, I grew up working real hard as a kid on tobacco farm. And I can remember at an early age, my grandfather had me out there about 9 or 10 years old, and he'd be fussing at me, telling me, you know, you need to do this, you need to do this. And I always was willing to work hard. I didn't have a drink when I was 9 or 10, but I probably could have used one. But anyway, so I was working hard as a young kid. I was into sports and stuff, and I'm going to go ahead and get right into it. I can remember the first time I took a drink. I was 12 years old, and my older sister, she had a bunch of older friends that were older than me, and I always used to hang out with them. And I remember one night I went out with them, and they were drinking. I was like, hey, can I have a drink? She was like, yeah, you can have one. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was a wine cooler, and I remember drinking it, and I drank one. And I probably drank it in like 2 or 3 minutes. And I was like, I love this. And of course, I had another. And from the first time I drank, I was a blackout drinker. I remember I woke up the next day, I was feeling like shit. But I was like, man, I love the way that made me feel. And I hear some people in the room say they drank because they didn't fit in. That really wasn't me, because I always fit in anywhere I went. I drank because I liked the way it made me feel. And but anyway, so after that, I remember my parents found out, you know, I got drunk. But, of course, their son, he never could do nothing wrong. They were like, oh, you drank one time, he'll be all right. But anyway, the first traumatic thing I ever saw was about 13 years old. My little brother was very small. And I remember coming in the house one night. My dad was drunk. It was a bunch of chaos in the house. And I hear everybody going crazy, and I run in there, and my little brother's like 2 years old, face down in the bathtub, and he had drowned, and my mom's giving him CPR, and it's going crazy in the house. And I was just like, oh my God, it just kind of, it kind of tore me up, and it kind of tore my family up. And that's kind of when my father really, really started drinking real heavy. So anyway, you know, after he come out of the hospital, he was fine after a couple of days, you know, everything was back to normal. So anyway, I had other than that, I mean, my father drank, and it was rough in the house sometimes, but we never wanted for nothing, and they always was there to support us. We grew up in a Baptist family, you know, everything was good. I mean, my house was like, even when I was growing up, my older sister, all her friends, they always come to my house, because my house was like the place where if you didn't fit in at your family's, at your home, you could come to my house, and you know you would always have a safe place to be. And, I mean, it was kind of chaos there sometimes, but kids loved it because my mom and dad always would take them in and feed them or give them love if they didn't have love at home. So, but anyway, when I was young, I played a bunch of sports, and when I was at about 14 years old is when I kind of started drinking, you know, kind of heavy. I started speed skating competitively, like roller speed skating, and I used to race, and I used to train, so I'd go to school. And after school, I would train all summer. We would train all summer long. And let me go back real fast. About school, I went to school and I made, you know, not A's or B's, but I did just enough to get by through grade school and like middle school. And then I started speed skating. And that's really when I started drinking. You know, on the weekends, we'd train hard. And then after that, I'd hang out with the older kids and we drank hard. So anyway, and I did that. I played soccer, I played baseball, I played a bunch of other sports. But the people that I hung out with when I was skating, it was the older kids. We liked to train hard, and we also they liked to party hard. So that was really when I kind of got introduced to drinking real heavy. And we usually trained out of town, so I'd stay with other families and their kids, and they would, you know, they were partying. So I just jumped right in with them. But anyway. So I went to high school, and when I got to high school, I was skating and I was playing soccer, and I was like a normal kid. I drank on the weekends, and I started, you know, experiment with other things when I was real young in high school, like a freshman. And let me see, I'm real nervous right here. I'm kind of going all over the place. Please forgive me for that, but anyway. Let me take a swallow of this. I'm real nervous. All right. So I'm in high school, and on the weekends I had a bunch of people always come over to my house for parties and stuff. And I can remember about the drinking. I always remember I wasn't the type of person that would just drink two or three beers at a party. I was always the person that I would drink, and everybody would be passed out in the party, and I would still be drinking, and I'd be looking for somebody that would drink with me. And I didn't drink because I wanted to drink to fit in, like I said earlier. I drank because I loved to drink, and from the first time I took a drink, I blacked out. And that was pretty much the way I drank. Every time I drank to get drunk, and I drank because I liked the way it made me feel. I didn't drink to fit in. I just liked the way it made me feel. But anyway, so I was in high school, and I really didn't do much drugs in high school. I smoked a little weed, and I was still training with my speed skating team. So I was traveling all over the country, going here and there, all up and down the East Coast. I've been out west. I went to Colorado Springs to Olympic Training Center, stayed out there for a week. And I was always training, so I was always disciplined to train, but I always liked to party real hard. So anyway, high school was coming along, and I remember one thing that stuck out from high school. I was coming home from a bar one night with my buddy, and we were both drunk, real drunk, and he was driving, and he was flying through downtown Knightdale right outside of Raleigh. And I remember, like, he went around a curb, and he flipped a car. It was just me and him and this girl in the back seat. He flipped his little RX-7 like three or four times, and we landed upside down. And I remember him looking at me, and he had busted all the teeth out of his mouth, and I was cut all up real bad. The girl in the back seat was really bad. And I remember the ambulance coming to get us, and I didn't think he was going to live, but he did. He was in bad, bad shape. And I went to the hospital, you know, they gave me some pain medication, sent me home. And the girl in the back was pretty hurt too. But my parents, I never had no consequences from that. And they knew what we were doing. They just were like, you know, my son, he really don't do nothing wrong. He might drink, but he does decent in school. He's got a bunch of friends. You know, he never causes really any big trouble. He's skating, he's winning, he's doing great in sports. So, and that's like a theme you'll see all the way through my life. My parents really didn't have much money, but they always were, anything that I did wrong, they'd always rescue me from it instead of letting me have the consequences, which I have later on in my story that get really bad. So anyway, from when I wrecked in that car, I missed a couple weeks from high school for that. And then also when I was out in Colorado Springs, I missed like 2 or 3 weeks. And I did decent in high school, but I didn't like to go. I liked to party a lot, even during the weekdays. So I missed a bunch of days during my senior year. And I remember that I was going to be short like one credit from graduating with my class. So. And my dad, he was like, oh, no, that's not going to happen. He goes up to the school and fucking embarrasses me in front of everybody, the principal. He goes in there and is like, my son, there's no way he's not going to graduate. And I was like, all he did really was embarrass me. And I ended up having to go to summer school anyway to graduate. But I did graduate. And right out of high school, I was still speed skating. And I was, you know, I barely graduated in summer school, but I did graduate. I moved to Orlando, Florida, right outside Orlando, Kissimmee, Florida, because I didn't have the grades really to go to a four-year school. So I found out this little trade and tourism school that I went to down there. And it was like a six-month school. And this is where I kind of got introduced to some heavier drugs. And I was still skating. I was going to take 6 months off to go down here. So I went down there. And as soon as I get there, I get in with the people that like to party like me, that like to drink, whatever. And I got introduced to other substances, like cocaine mainly, that kind of took me down a little bit. But anyway, I stayed there for like 3 months. I wasn't going to class or nothing. So after like 3 months, I wasn't doing like I was supposed to do. What I was doing was drinking, getting fucked up, doing whatever I wanted to do to make me happy. Because throughout my whole life, when I got here, I remember somebody said, Jeremy Cook, for you guys that know him, he was like, man, he showed me page 62. He was like, you're selfish and self-centered. I was like, how could I be selfish? All I've done my whole life is look out for people. If anybody ever need anything, I'd help them out. But once I went through the steps, I realized that no matter what I did for other people, I always did stuff for me first, because that's how we are. We're selfish, we're self-centered, and I realized that through working the steps. But anyway, after about 3 months being in Orlando, I was just raising hell, not doing nothing positive. So I come back to North Carolina, and my father then, he had a convenience store that he had opened up, and I started working for him some. And this is right about when I stopped speed skating, because I remember I was traveling like, once I got back to North Carolina, I was traveling like 2 hours every day to practice. And one day, one summer day, we were training for regionals. No, we were training for nationals. And I remember I was skating. We were doing it indoors that day. And I hit the wall and I broke both my arms, dislocated my shoulder. And I hurt myself real bad. They took me to the hospital. They put two casts on my arms, put my arm in a sling. And I remember, because this is the first time I ever really got introduced to opiates. I mean, I had had them before from, like, injuries, but they give me a shot of Dilaudid in the hospital, and as soon as they give me that shot, I was like, whoa, I love that. And I remembered, I was like, fuck, why would I need to drink when I could drink into this and get twice the effect? So anyway, after that, I pretty much, my skating career was over. I still did a little bit, but I was back at home with my family. And I was working for my dad at his convenience store. And I was working there, but I was also doing other things that were illegal. And I'm not going to really get into that, but you'll probably figure it out. And my mom and dad both knew what I was doing the whole time, but they really didn't care. As long as I looked like I was okay and I wasn't really getting into no real legal trouble, they were cool with it. But anyway, so this is where I met this girl, and I thought I loved her. She was really like the first love in my real love of my life. So anyway, long story short, we were together for a couple years, and she gets pregnant, and she knew what I was doing. She knew how bad I partied. She knew that I was doing this and that. Anyway, I go out of town and I come back, and I didn't know anything for like 2 weeks, and come to find out she had had an abortion. And she told me about it, and this is kind of like really the first consequence that really bothered me, and it really affected me. And I kind of just took off of my drinking and the other substances I was doing. And we stayed together, and I was like, I was telling her, you know, I can't believe you did that, but I understand because her mom didn't want me to, you know, her to have a kid with me because I wasn't doing nothing like I was supposed to do. So anyway, I stayed together with her, and, you know, a couple years go by, and she gets pregnant again, and I was like, all right, I'm going to stop doing everything I'm doing. We're going to settle down. I promise you, I'm gonna stop doing everything illegal. I'm just going to work for my dad. I'll go back to school. So I started back in college. That lasted like 2 months because I couldn't stay. I couldn't make it to class because I was getting tore up. Anyway, with that, you know the theme with me already. I'm like telling my parents, hey, look, I'm going to settle down. Me and Bethany, we're going to have a kid here, and her and my sister were best friends. So anyway, I go out of town to do something that I wasn't supposed to be doing, and I come back, find out that she had another abortion, and that really just, like, tore me up. I started spiraling out of control, and, you know, one thing led to another. I got in trouble quite a few times, and I moved out of Raleigh. I moved to the beach because I thought that Raleigh was my problem. You know, I was done with her, we broke up, and I thought the reason why I was getting all this trouble and I couldn't, you know, stay sober, couldn't do nothing, which I never tried to stop partying, I just thought if I moved somewhere else I could slow down, but it don't work like that. So anyway, me and my buddy Jeremy Cook, the guy that got me down here, I moved down to the beach with him for a couple years. All I did was run the road, you know, not do nothing like I was supposed to do, and my drinking's just taking off. And the way I drink is I'll start drinking, and I'll drink, you know, until I pass out. And that's just how I drink. And I don't understand that. So, like, my dad, he drinks every day when he gets off work, but he wakes up every day and goes to work. I can't do that. And I don't know. I guess because I'm a real alcoholic. And I just, when I drink like that, I put everything else on the back burner. The only thing I'm worried about is what I'm going to do to make me feel better and whatever is best for me, which I thought was, and that would be drinking. But anyway, I'm going to get on to the other stuff because I could go all day with a bunch of bullshit. Anyway, so anyway, I'm just going to get into the main, like, consequences I had. So anyway, I had a daughter in 2002, which is Savannah Lee Adams. She's the most beautiful thing in the world. And I thought, you know, I got a daughter now. I'm going to straighten up. I'm going to start doing the right thing. It didn't work like that. I got in trouble again. Next thing you know, I got in some trouble where I couldn't get myself out of it. And I had to go away, and I did a year and a half in prison. And about 2 months before I got out of prison, my mom used to bring my daughter to see me every weekend. But when I got 2 months before I got out of prison, I started getting real sick. I had Graves, hyperactive thyroidism, and my neck started swelling up. I started losing a bunch of weight. And my thyroid, just what it was, my thyroid was off. So the day I got out of prison, after being, I wasn't clean, I won't use, and for a year and a half, I was like, man, I'm going to get out. I'm going to do something positive with my life. I don't want to go back to where I was living. Of course, when I got out, I was so sick. I went to the doctor, and she's like, David, you have hyperthyroid. You're going to need surgery. I was like, well, can you give me something for the pain? Because I'm fucking hurting here. And, of course, I'm such a manipulator. She gave me whatever I wanted. She had me back on the pain pills and the benzos. And off to the races I was. I never had a chance when I got out of prison because I didn't know then what I know now. And if what I know now I knew then I could have come out of prison and taken a different approach. But my addict mind, alcoholic mind, was telling me, quick fix, get the pain pills, get the alcohol, whatever, and you'll feel better for the time being. So anyway, I had surgery like a couple months after that to get my levels down. And anyway, after that, you know, I was just pretty much strung out junkie. I mean, I didn't have no chance. This was in 2009, and I just, from 2009, I'm just going to skip the rest of this shit because it really don't matter. It's the same thing that everybody here's probably got the same story, and it don't matter. I was fucked up. I didn't have a solution. Back then, my solution was drugs and alcohol. Today, I have a solution, and I'm going to get to right before I came here. The guy, you keep saying his name, Jeremy Cook, which you know him. He came through Healthcare Connection like 3 months before me. Anyway, he came home for Christmas, last Christmas, and I was in bad shape. I mean, I couldn't leave the house. I couldn't do nothing. I mean, I barely could even take care of myself. I couldn't take care of myself. I couldn't do nothing except wait to get the next fix so I can make it through the day. He came home. He had been clean like 3 months when he came home. He came and picked me up. He was like, man, you need some help, bro. I was like, man, I know I need some help. I don't have insurance. My family, we don't have the money. I'm just struggling just to make it day to day, just to even get by. He's like, dude, he said, I've been praying for you. And my mom always tells me, she says, Dave, I never stop praying for you. She was like, I know one day. And I've always believed in God. And I always, they say it's a foxhole prayer. I always used to say, God, please get me out of this. Because a lot of people say they didn't have fun drinking and using. I had a great time up till like the last 3 years. It was so miserable, and I did not know how to stop. And I never stopped praying. And Jeremy came over there, and he was like, man, there's this place in Tampa, and I already knew what was going on. He was like, dude, if there's any way possible, you can figure out a way to get there. I was like, well, Jeremy, you know I don't have the money. I don't know how I can make it down there. But this is what God does for me what I can't do for myself. God had put this woman in my life, in my family's life, a friend in my family's that was really concerned because I was on the verge of death. And I sat down with her, me and Jeremy sat down with her. She was like, Dave, I'd do anything for you, anything for your family. I was like, well, I only have one wish. Will you please help me get into this treatment center in Florida? And she was like, yes, we'll do it. So anyway, I never stopped praying, and I guess that's how I got here, because I never could have put that together myself. I've been trying to get to treatment for 3 years. Ever since I got out of prison and had that surgery, I was like, I just want to stop, but I don't know how. Anyway, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. Anyway, January the 3rd, I got on a plane, and the day I got here, I walked in this room, tore up from the floor up. Tuesday night, I got the plane and I came here. And the day I got here, I was like, I surrender. I didn't even know what that meant. The first person I see is Brett Boyer, and he's screaming at me because Jeremy said, I got a buddy coming from North Carolina. I want you to talk to him. I was like, what the fuck's this redneck talking to me about, Jeremy? He's crazy as hell. He's scaring me. I was like, shit. So anyway, I got down here, and I had a pretty rough detox. Like 30 days they had me on detox meds. But as soon as I got here, I was ready. I was hungry for it. I said I'd do anything not to have to feel the way I used to feel because I was so miserable living like that. I mean, I had no hope. I had no prayer. I had nothing. I've tried everything. I mean, I was a lost cause. And when I got down here, I jumped right in. I did whatever they said I had to do. And, I mean, I just surrendered. If you're having a hard time being here and you don't think this program works, it does. And it's like step one. You just have to surrender. You got to know that you're powerless, not just over alcohol and drugs. You're pretty much powerless over any decision you think that's a bad decision. It's probably a bad decision. So anyway, I stayed in treatment for like 2 months in day treatment. And they told me to get a sponsor. I had this guy that I was talking to, but of course I kind of went back to my old thinking. I was like, well, I've detoxed, I'm sober now, I'm just going to sit around here for a little while, you know, things should get better. So I sat around here for like 2 or 3 months in structured living. I didn't do nothing, and finally I saw Brett one day, and I was like, look, man, he was like, you tired of living the way you're living? You got sober, but you're not in sobriety. I was like, you're damn right, what do I need to do? He said, read page 103, and he called me. I read it. We jumped right into the steps, and I mean, if you don't believe that the steps work for you, I can't explain how they work for me. I just know they work. When they were telling me, Mike Davis was saying, you need to work the steps, 12 steps of this program. I was like, what the fuck's 12 steps going to do for me? But if you believe anything I said tonight, believe me, the only solution is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and God. Because that's what keeps me sober today. Not Brett Boyer, not my mom and dad, not Mike Davis, not Dr. Myers, none of them. What keeps me sober is God and working the 12 steps of this program. And I really can't explain to you how it worked. I got honest with him. I told him what was, and he used to tell me, he was like, if you're talking, it's nothing but shit coming out of your mouth because you don't know shit. And then after I worked the steps with him, he's like, now you can help somebody out. So that's what I do. So I was miserable. I sat here for like 3 or 4 months before. I didn't do nothing. I wasn't working or nothing. I was just sitting there. I was sober, but I wasn't in sobriety. Today I'm in sobriety. Today I got a job. I'm closer with my daughter than I've ever been. I've been home 5 times. I've got 11 months sober next week. I'm working with other alcoholics, which one of them's here tonight. I always help the guys around the village, anybody that needs anything. I haven't had a driver's license for 10 years, and I will have one come the 1st of February, which that's a miracle in itself right there. Because my thinking, of course, the last 10 years, I was like, well, all I got to do is do this and I'll get my license back. It won't never going to happen. I won't never going to have a chance at doing nothing. And this old man one time, he told me, he was like, Dave, and this is when I was locked away. He was like, as long as you're behind that fence right there, there's no chance in the world that you're going to stumble across a bag of money. He said, if you stay on the other side of that fence, there's a chance you might stumble onto it. And that's pretty much what I'm trying to say with this. You can stay sober, but until you start working the program, you're probably not going to have a chance at a life. But if you give it the little bit of chance, then there's, I mean, I can't explain how good life is today. I mean, I still live in three-quarter structured living, but I'm happier today than I've probably been in 20 years. And my family's so happy with me. I got great friendship with all the guys here that I'm closer than with some of the people that I've known for 30 years. And, I mean, I pray on a continuous basis. I got a connection with a higher power today, and I choose to call it God. And I always, for the last, like, 10 years, I always thought to myself, I was like, man, I'm never going to be able to do nothing.
I'm going to be a failure to my daughter and my family, but by the grace of God, that's not going to be, as long as I keep doing what I'm supposed to doing and I don't pick up a drink or a drug, no matter what, I still have a chance to be a good father. And the way my daughter looks at me today is priceless, because I was always around her. I was there, but I really wasn't there. And when I go home now and I see her and I see that look in her eyes, every bit of it was worth it, because it's been a struggle being down here away from my family. But And I was going to go back home. I tried to take my will back and, you know, try to make things happen the way I wanted to happen like 3 months ago. And I about fucking slipped up, and I'd have had to start all back over if I'd have made it back. I didn't take a drink or a drug, but my mind was trying to make things happen back home when the only thing I need to do was stay right here until the time's right. And I'll know when that time's right, because God will let me know today. And I'm just so, so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful that I had a chance to go to a place like I did that give me the knowledge. And I'm so grateful for the 12 steps, because it armed me with the facts about myself, which I never knew that before, that I'm selfish and I'm self-centered and I'm self-seeking. But when that slips up on me today, I know how to deal with it. And when problems come up today, like last week, one of my best friends down here, there, all you know him, he went out again after 10 months of being clean. That same day, my mom calls me. She was like, Dave, you probably need to sit down. This girl, one of my best friends growing up, she went to treatment, stayed clean 2 months, came home. She thought she could take a drink. 2 days later, she went back just to what she wanted to have, her drug of choice, which was stick a needle in her arm. They found her Thanksgiving Day OD dead in the bathroom. And it's really a privilege to be in, because I know most of the guys here from the treatment center, it's a privilege that so many guys would love to have your seats where you're at. And all I can tell you, the main advice I can tell you is to just take advantage of the opportunity you have today, because there's so many people in this country that they're not going to have a shot because they don't have people that, like Toby, that has this meeting for the guys, and Brett Boyer that works with the guys, that can help you realize what the solution is that can help you make it in life instead of just falling back to drugs and alcohol, which are the easy way to go. Which the same, that was my solution for 20-some years. But today, I don't have to use that solution no more. And by the grace of God, I've been sober 11 months, and that is a miracle in itself. And if I can stay sober, anybody can. And I'm just so grateful that I'm here today, and because I shouldn't be here. I'm living on borrowed time, because after I saw Jeremy, before I came down here, I OD'd two times within a week of making it down here to Tampa. So it's a miracle that I'm here today. I'm so grateful. I love all you guys, and that's all I got.
Awesome. Dave P.